Welcome back, everyone, to the Chaos Ball Podcast, your premier honk ball podcast of the internet, centering on honk ball and the Seattle honk ball Mariners. Of course, honk ball, being the Dutch word for baseball, is my new favorite word. I will only call baseball honk ball from here on out. Major League Honk Ball, the MLH. That sounds nice. I'm going to petition Rob Manfred for that. But thanks for tapping in again. Another week of Mariners baseball. They're keeping us around. These honk ballers, they're keeping us around. They are 3.5 games back. And they're clinging to life, to what little hope that we have left. They've gained a few games on the Astros since we last spoke. I believe they were 5 or 5.5 games out. In the last podcast, their Fangraphs playoff odds are up to 18.5. I think just yesterday they were like 10. 18.5 is still low, but not nothing. 1.3% chance to win the World Series, according to Fangraphs. That's pretty funny. But their strength of schedule remaining is actually pretty decent. It's over 500. The Astros theoretically have an easier schedule. Something I looked at yesterday when Jacob deGrom was announced to be coming back probably in September. The Mariners play the Rangers 7 times in September. So there is a non-zero chance that we see Jacob deGrom twice on the mound. That is a possibility. I'm just looking at the schedule right now. They play Texas 4 times from the 12th to the 15th. Then they have 3 games against the Yankees in between. And then they have 3 more games at Texas after that. So that's 7 games in, what, a 10, 11-day span here. So it is feasible that we see Jacob deGrom. It's likely we see him once. If we don't see him once, that would be kind of insane. But I envisioned a future in September when the Mariners are closer to the Astros. Maybe they're still 3.5 back and it's not looking good by then. Or maybe they're 1 game back and then Jacob deGrom just shoves it up their ass for a game or 2 games even and just really dashes their hopes. Because looking at the Texas Rangers right now is a little bit like looking at food. They have not been playing well. I think the like 7 games against them in September could be very good for the Mariners, could be quite advantageous for the Seattle Mariners, but we'll see. We'll see. But the Astros, they have cooled off slightly. They're still playing pretty good honk ball at the moment, but they've cooled off a little bit. And the Mariners 3.5 back. I talked about it last week. I don't think they're just going to, like, when they were 5 back, it was still possible. They're 3.5 back. It's not even September yet, so it's entirely in the realm of possibility that they can win this division still. That is not hope that this franchise nor the 2024 team has earned. But I'm a human. Human nature is hopeful. I am always going to have a little bit of hope. And it's not an insurmountable lead by any stretch of the imagination. And what really it's going to shape up to be is the Mariners are going to claw their way back to tied in the division. And then they play the Astros late September. And then the Astros like sweep them and it's over. Or it comes down to like the final couple days like last season and the Mariners end up missing the playoffs by a game. They seem to really enjoy doing that. So that's definitely on the table as well. I have this episode, I'm riffing. I got numbers to show you. I'm going to praise the pitching staff. I'm going to give the starting pitching staff and a couple of the relief pitchers their flowers that they have earned this season. It's a pitching staff that I think deserves to pitch in the playoffs, and I think we should just keep talking about how good they are. But before I talk about the pitching staff, I will bring you down a little bit and tell you a little bit of why this team is so infuriating this season, because I've looked at their records when they've scored a certain amount of runs in each game. It's bleak. It's just like a hilariously, uniquely infuriating baseball team that Jerry DePoto and co. have. I meant honkball team. It's just what a for even for a Mariners franchise that is so enraging at times for the fans, and quite, I don't know, they just twist the knife a lot. They salt the wound a lot. This year has been uniquely, uniquely sad. And in so many ways, it's not that they've been playing bad. You take a pop under the hood and look at the underlying numbers of this team, and there's just a great team in here, and it simply all boils down to scoring like one more run a game, basically, is what this boils down to. So before that, real quick, just looking at their second half performance, it obviously hasn't been good. 16-20. It's right around where the Phillies are, funny enough, but second half, 16-20, really has not been good. Been one of the worst teams in baseball in the second half. They're playing, and around this, over the span of the season, they're playing under their Pythagorean win-loss record, which is their expected win-loss. It's 70-64, and they are 68-66. They've lost the plot there. This is a baseball team the past few years that's had to squeeze as many wins out of this roster as humanely possible to reach their desired outcome of 90 wins and what the front office sets out to do. And some of that in recent years, I think, was a credit to the pitching and the bullpen in particular. I think you win a lot of one-run games on the back of a good bullpen. I think, again, like I said, when Scott Servais got canned, I think it's on the back of the coaching staff as well and how they manage games. I don't think you accidentally get lucky and win a bunch of one-run games in like a three-year span. I think there's some luck to it. I think some of it is good bullpen and good management. And then also, of course, relying on like some chaos ball situations and some chaos ball luck that they tend to conjure up because they're just not a normal baseball team. But this year, they've lost the plot, and they are two games under their Pythag. It's just not what we've seen from this team. They constantly won more than both they were projected to before the season and just in the season. Looking at their Pythag, they always played above it. I think it literally is just because of the pitching and the bullpen. But this year, the bullpen has wavered. It hasn't been as good in recent years. I mean, we knew going into it we weren't going to have Brash, and we weren't going to have Santos for a lot of the year. Now we probably won't have Santos for the rest of the year either. But some of the guys who were staples in the pen, like last year even, like Gabe Spire, not been good. Like, and Taylor Saucedo has not had a great year. It just has not been an amazing year for the pen. And I think they've also probably been slightly unlucky, and I think that's just the nature of baseball. You get unlucky, that's just how it goes. But this is the conundrum. I'm not trying to build a better team. This is the crux of the issue that I and many people have with the front office. It's you shoot for 95 wins, maybe you falter and get unlucky, have some injuries, what have you, and you win 90, or even you win 88, and still make the playoffs. Maybe. You have a better chance to make the playoffs that way, I should say. But you shoot for 54%. You shoot for 87 wins. And if you falter, you're looking at what happens. Like, they're projected right now around 82, 83 wins. I mean, even if they went on a tear, I think their only hope to win the division at this point is to win like 87 games at the least, 88. And that's if the Astros really take a dive, which who knows? It's unlikely, but that means they would need to go. Let me just do some quick maths in my head. I'll be honest with y'all. I had to pause the recording there to do the math. I'm not super good at quick maths. But right now they're 68-66. They have 28 games left. That means I can do that quick math. They have to go 20-8 in their final 28 games to win 88 games, which is roughly where they've been the past few years. And that could sneak them into the playoffs. It could. Division-wise, I don't think they have any chance in the wild card. Like, off a wing and a prayer, they get in the wild card with 88 games. But it's looking like it's going to be Yankees or Orioles. Maybe not the Red Sox now. But then probably an AL East team and two AL Central teams is what it's looking like right now. But I mean, they could make it interesting. If they go 20-8, that'd be awesome. But it's like, it's 22-6 to win 90 games. And 90 games is like the bare minimum of where this team should be at right now. And the front office should be embarrassed. So I just wanted to get that out of the way. They've lost the plot this season in terms of they're under their Pythagorean win-loss. It's just not what we've seen from this team. We've seen them play honkball a little bit better than this in the past couple of years. God, the Dutch language, man. The Dutch language is utterly ridiculous. Not to tangent a little bit, but the Dutch language is just, it's unserious in the best possible way. Like, the Mariners right now, they have been a serious problem, if you know what I'm saying. But let's, I could talk about the Dutch language for a lot longer, but let's get into it. Why are the Mariners bad? Bad offense. What happens when they score more than two runs a game? Oh, good things. It's crazy. It's crazy when you factor that in. So let's just look. Let's look at the Mariners' records after certain scoring thresholds. So I looked at when they score three or more. I looked at when they score four or more. And I looked at when they score five or more. And then I dug up, just out of curiosity, where they're scoring two or less, what their record is versus the league. So let's just start. Let's start with three runs, shall we? And just a reminder here, the Mariners are averaging 3.9 runs a game at the moment. That would put them at what? Fifth worst in the league, tied with the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. And then the White Sox are last at 3.1. The Marlins are second to last at 3.7. And then the Rays are right above the Angels and the Mariners, third to last at 3.8. And those teams will come up often in what I'm reading here for you. So when the Mariners score three or more runs, they are 62-23. That is a 72.9 win percentage. And that's fourth in all of Major League Honkball in those such games. So they're the fourth winningest team in the league when they score three or more runs. The thing is, they've only had 85 such games where they scored three or more runs this season. That's the fourth fewest in the league. The only teams who've had less games than that, scoring three or more runs, are the Chicago White Sox with the fewest, the Tampa Bay Rays, and then the Oakland A's. All three, top three in the lowest amount of three-run-plus games this season, and then the Mariners are right there next to the Angels. Now let's go to four. Let's go to four-run games. Where are the Mariners? They are 55-11 when scoring four or more runs in a honkball game. That's an 83.3% win percentage. That's the second best in the league. I think you can see where this is going. So they've had 66 such games, scoring four or more runs. That's the fifth fewest in the league. And lo and behold, the White Sox have the least amount, scoring that many. The Marlins are right behind them. And then the A's and the Rays are all above the Mariners, below. So do you see a trend starting to form here? Let's go to five. This is the one that's going to kick you right in the nuts. Their record when scoring five or more runs, 43-4. They have only lost four games this season when they've scored five or more runs. That is by far the best winning percentage in the league in games where they score five or more runs. 43-4. That's a 91.5 win percentage. The next best team on this list is the Padres with an 89.1% win percentage in those games. So they have some freaking separation at the top when they score that many runs. But can you guess how many of those they've had? They're tied for fourth fewest of those games in the league. And a shout out to the AL West bringing up the rear here. So obviously the White Sox have the fewest games scoring five plus runs. then the Marlins, then the Rays, and then the Oakland A's, the Texas Rangers, and the Seattle Mariners are tied for fourth with 47 games of 5-plus runs. So when they score more than 3 runs, they are one of the best teams in the league. When they score more than 4, they are maybe the best team in the league. When they score more than 5 runs in a game, they are literally the best team in the league at winning those games. They just simply don't do it very often. It is infuriating. It is a, again, like I say, uniquely hilarious team this year. It is, oh my God, it's just awful. And out of curiosity, like I said, so I looked at also what they've done scoring 2 or less runs a game. So reminder, they score 3.9 runs a game. So average that out, you know, they're not scoring a lot more than 5 in a game. They're not doing that super often. They're scoring more than 3 a little bit often, but they're also scoring 2 or less pretty often as well. But caveat, for scoring 2 or less games, I looked at the whole league. No team is good in these games. Like, it's not like there's a team with a winning percentage that's over 500 in games where they score 2 or less. Like, you're generally going to lose if you don't score that many runs. So the first place team in this, interestingly enough, and it's not surprising, it's the Milwaukee Brewers. And they have a 25.8% win percentage in those games. So that's the highest. The Mariners have a 12.2 in those games. So that's like middle of the pack. That's 13 best. 6-43 in games where they have 2 runs or less. But can you guess what I'm going to tell you now? Who do you think has had the most games scoring 2 or less runs? You should be able to guess the top 3. It's the White Sox at the top. It's the Rays, and then it's the A's. And then who's in fourth? The Seattle Mariners. The Seattle Mariners are in fourth place. You got to go double digits to find a team that might make the playoffs, besides the Mariners, I guess, who has this many games scoring 2 or less runs. So I'm just going to read it to you. Again, White Sox, Rays, A's, Mariners. And then after the Mariners, Nationals, nope. Angels, nope. Marlins, nope. Pirates, nope. Rangers, nope. Tigers, they've been playing better, but no. Rockies, nah. Cubs in 12th. I guess that's the closest one. And then Padres, 13th. That's when you get like the more closer to playoff teams. So looking these numbers up did not give me any joy. Just a ridiculous baseball team. I can't believe they're the best team in the league when they score 5 or more runs. It's ridiculous. God, so much potential with this pitching staff, really. And even if they just had internal improvements, like, they would be potentially in first place. Like, it's not all on Julio. Like, if JP was healthy and having the season he had last year, if Julio was closer to doing what he did last year and was healthy and didn't have his ankle injury, I think they'd legit be in first place. I think they would have a few more games scoring 5 runs, and they don't lose those games, as we just went over. So, real fun teams at the top of this list that have scored, that have had the most games scoring 5-plus, the top of this list: Diamondbacks, Yankees, Royals, Red Sox, Phillies, and then the Mets is kind of the first team that's like not great. And then the Dodgers, Padres, Twins, Brewers, Guardians, Orioles, Blue Jays, 13th, Astros, 14th. Can you see what all those teams have in common? That's like a list of playoff teams. That is the list of all the division and wildcard leaders right now. Scoring runs is helpful, turns out. I know, it's kind of crazy when you really think about it. Scoring runs is helpful, but just wanted to bless your Friday with some real feel-good numbers right there. So if you just block out the games where they score 2 or less, the Mariners are cooking right now. Let's look at it. Let's look at glass half full here, folks. Okay, let's talk about the pitching staff. I truly think that this team is gearing up for maximum pain possible in September. But the one thing that's going to be a constant is the pitching is going to be good in September. I'm pretty confident. This pitching staff is something that I need to see in the playoffs. They deserve to throw playoff innings. The league deserves to see them throw playoff innings. I mean, Brian Wu is their fifth starter, for Christ's sake. Like, good. Like, it's an embarrassment of riches they have in an era where pitching is up, yes. But there's not that many teams that have this many healthy, good pitchers, starter-wise. Like, it's an era where a lot of the top pitchers have been really hurt this year. The Mariners have gotten so many innings out of these pitchers. Again, Brian Wu's their fifth starter because he's just been hurt a lot and he has the least amount of experience. Could be the best pitcher of the bunch next season. Who knows? These guys have been good all year. We know this. But Bryce Miller in particular, the past, 2 months, he's been excellent. And it's since adding his curveball. So he's throwing this new knuckle curve. It's looked really nice. It's given him just a lot more options to attack hitters. I think his sweeper was never that good. He introduced that splitter, which was great. But really, it was like fastball was elite. Like the shape and the stuff of his fastball was elite. Definitely has been throwing it in better locations this year. The sinker looked like a pretty decent pitch this year as well. Then he had a slider, he had a sweeper that were okay, and the splitter was great this year, but he didn't have another pitch that was like super differentiated from all those, and now he does. Now he has this curveball that is so, I don't want to say loopy, but it's just so different from all these pitches. Gives him a different look. It's worked really well. He's throwing like 8 pitches an outing now. It's awesome. I love it. I think I've talked about it on this podcast before, but it's part of the reasons why Yu Darvish is one of my favorite pitchers of all time, because Yu Darvish probably has thrown in his career 50 different types of pitches in a major league game. I think if you look at his like Savant page, even for last year, I think he probably has 10 pitches on there. Because I think he has every pitch in the arsenal, but then he has 5 different types of his four-seam fastball. He has 7 different ways to throw his slider. He throws everything. And so Bryce Miller this year, just looking at his pitch usage since he added this curveball, it's awesome. He added this knuckle curve, I think it was June 29th was the first game he threw it in, so end of June, so we have basically seen exactly 2 months of him since he added this to his arsenal. Since then, he's at around 10% curveball usage now, but recently, in the month of August, he has thrown 41% four-seam fastball, 15% splitter, around 12% slider sinker, 10% curveball, 5.5% sweeper, and then 4% cutter. That's 7 pitches, and he's doing it routinely in these outings now. It's just amazing. I just love it. He is just, and watching him and Brian Wu and all the other guys talk about pitching, I just want to listen. I just want to listen to what they're talking about. I feel like they're just like, I bet you couldn't throw this in a game next week, and then they do it. Talking about pitch grips, just variations of the pitches. I just want to hear them talk. I just want to hear them talk about pitching. It's awesome. So let's get into why it's been good. Obviously, I talked about why it's good, but I guess not why, but the numbers behind it. So since adding this curveball, he has thrown 58 1/3 innings with a 2.16 ERA and a 2.71 FIP to go along with that. So he's really getting it done. Striking out almost 9 guys per 9, walking less than 1 guy per 9. And among qualified starters, since he added that pitch, he's got the 8th highest F4 with 1.7, right ahead of his teammate Logan Gilbert, and he's the 3rd lowest ERA in that span. He has just been amazing. He's just been phenomenal since adding that curveball. And like I said, I just absolutely love watching him throw 7 pitches an outing. It's just such a joy. And then broader scope, this pitching staff, I mean, George Kirby, I guess, has been, I wouldn't say, maybe a little disappointing. His body of work largely has been good. he's just had a couple games this year where he's given up like 10 runs. That has kind of tanked some of his numbers here. And we'll get into the two different kinds of wars here in a second. But he, I guess he's been the biggest disappointment. But even disappointing, he's having a great year. Logan Gilbert has been the one that's just been, I compared him to a Clydesdale horse the other day on the internet. He's just a hoss. He is just, he's a stallion. He's so good. And it's just dominance. You talk about mound presence is just, it's important for pitchers. And he has as good of a mound presence of anyone in the league. And I think the fact that he is 6'6" and just coming down at you off that mound, and he releases the ball so close to home plate, that adds to it. And he's just, like we talked about his alter ego, Walter, he's just a different dude up there, and it shows. He mows guys down. He shows tons of emotion when he gets out of jams. It's just been amazing. It's just been awesome to watch him flourish into this frontline ace, Cy Young-type pitcher, especially because he was kind of the first of this new wave of Mariners prospects. Like, he was the first to kind of make it out of the rebuild. It was him and Cal. And then obviously shortly after that, we had George come up, Julio come up, and then recently like Bryce Miller, Brian Wu. But Logan Gilbert was the first guy to get called up. He was one of the first college pitcher draft picks that this newfangled front office made that looked like it was really the future. So it's even more special. And he, again, has been a huge part of this rotation all year, but this rotation, all of them have been awesome. The Mariners have four of their starters in the top 50 of Fangraph's WAR, and Brian Wu is 53rd. And obviously, he's only thrown like 87 innings, and he's 53rd in Major League Honkball in F-WAR, which is pretty awesome. So if you just put it like top 55, all five of the Mariners starters are in there, which is astounding. And then if you looked at Baseball Reference WAR, which I think a lot of people should also look at for pitchers, they also have four starters in the top 50 of Baseball Reference WAR. But Kirby is the only one outside of that, and he's 55th. So again, if you did top 55 in both WARs, they have all five of their starters, Baseball Reference and Fangraphs. I do not know what Baseball Prospectus's warp is looking like for these guys, but I bet it's pretty good. And it's interesting, the discrepancy in the WARs. I've talked about this on the pod before, but it makes sense to me why Brian Wu is so much higher in Baseball Reference WAR and Kirby is so much lower in Baseball Reference WAR. It's because Baseball Reference WAR for pitching is based on runs allowed per nine as one of the main calculators there. And Fangraphs WAR is based on FIP. And as we know, Kirby is kind of a FIP king. He is really good at limiting damage to what he can control. And Brian Wu, this season, he has, you know, we'll wait another season for me to dub him a FIP or Sierra or ERA king or whatever I'm going to call him. But simply put, he has been a little bit luckier, I guess you could say, this year than George Kirby and other people. But he's really just not allowed runs in his starts. He's been insane. He has, a two flat ERA right now. Let me just real quick look. 2.05 ERA, 2.92 FIP. So still phenomenal, both of those numbers, but a lower ERA is just going to get you more Baseball Reference WAR. So you look at it, Fangraphs is more how truly good are these pitchers? Looking at it in a vacuum, and Baseball Reference WAR is how good have these pitchers been this year with all of the outcomes factored in. As we know, ERA is slightly flawed in that way. That's why we have other numbers like FIP, Sierra, XFIP, whatever. And that's why I think both these WARs are useful. You just got to know how to use them. But the discrepancy is crazy. So Brian was 24th in Baseball Reference WAR, tied with Logan Gilbert for the highest on the Mariners rotation in Baseball Reference WAR, with 2.8. And then you look at Fangraphs WAR, and he has a 2.1 in Fangraphs WAR, 53rd overall in the league. And some of that is body of work, like, again, 87 innings, but slightly higher FIP. But point is, all five of these guys have been insane. They've been insanely good. It's been awesome to watch, and it's going to be a disservice to pitching to pitchers everywhere, to pitcher enjoyers everywhere, to the fans, to the pitchers themselves, a disservice to everyone involved if they don't get to throw in the playoffs, because especially it's in this day and age, there's not very many teams who'd feel comfortable with their fifth starter throwing or starting a playoff game. And I think at this point, if the Mariners had to start Brian Wu, actually, I'll go even farther. A lot of teams barely know who's starting game three and aren't super confident in their game three starter, as the Mariners would be in, I don't know, it'd probably be George Kirby or Luis Castillo. I think Logan Gilbert would be your game one starter, and Luis or Kirby would be two or three. And then you go even further than that. What team, what playoff team right now is confident in their fourth and fifth starter to start playoff games? Playoffs started today. If the Mariners were in a five-game series, and then let's say they're in a seven-game series, I think they'd be very okay with starting Bryce Miller and Brian Wu at playoff games. I think they'd be very okay with that. And I don't think there's any other team in the league that can say that about their fourth and fifth starters. It's been insane, and it's that's why it's even worse, the fact that they're 68-66. Awful. Who else has been good? Again, like I said, the bullpen has faltered this year. Compared to recent years, they've had an awesome bullpen recent years. This year, it's been fine. Hasn't been great. Again, part of it was Brash out for the year, probably because he threw 400 innings last year as a relief pitcher and was awesome and throwing as hard as he possibly could in all of those innings. And Santos, same thing, hard-throwing reliever, injury troubles. But they just haven't gotten the type of contribution as they've wanted, even with a pitching lab success in Colin Snyder. And that's part of who I want to talk about today, Andrés Muñoz and Colin Snyder. They have just both been awesome. Andrés Muñoz, a little bit of a stumble early in the year, but it is as of... If you're a relief pitcher who stumbles in April, nobody will remember that if you have a really good May or even a really good June to the rest of the season. And Andrés Muñoz has been sublime for this team. Among qualified relievers, Andrés Muñoz is 10th overall in earned run average with a 1.76, which is just amazing. I'm just skimming through like Muñoz's numbers. Eye test is like he's just back. We saw him in 2022. He was one of the best relievers in baseball. His slider was one of the best pitchers in baseball. Last year, he had a really good year, just got hurt and only threw 49 innings total. This year, he was still hurt a little bit, but he's thrown 51 already. So in September, if he's fully healthy all of September, he'll get close to 65 like he did in 2022, I'm sure. Maybe even surpass it, depending on how much they end up using him and leading on him in September. But really, the numbers look similar to what we saw in 2022 when he was so dominant. He, like, go to his Savant page. It's red. It is blood red everywhere except for walk rate and barrel rate. Everything else, he has been dynamite. And it's not dissimilar to what we saw in 2022. His slider has been elite. And his fastballs have been good complementary pitches. It helps he throws so hard. But he throws hard enough on those fastballs to keep him honest. And his slider has just been so good. I mean, his slider where he locates it, like, just below the zone, it is impossible. It is impossible to hit. Like, he is 99th percentile whiff percentage. Like, he has 97th percentile fastball velocity. Like, his chase rate is elite. His hard hit rate is elite. His K percentage is elite. Like, his barrel rate, weirdly enough, people barrel him quite often, but it's not hit super hard for a barrel, I guess you could say. So it's just, he's been awesome. He has been everything they have could have wanted this year in the back of the bullpen. I just wish he had a couple better setup men in front of him. But Colin Snyder has taken up that role in the second half. Since he's come back up, he's looked awesome. He's looked so good, and they've started to give him those back-of-the-bullpen innings, partly, I think, because he's earned it, and partly because necessity. It's necessitated him to do that because Jimmy is out with injury and wasn't great when he was pitching, and Santos is out, and no one else this year had really stepped up to be that guy. And Snyder is right now. Like, if you cherry pick a little bit because he's not qualified, I think he's thrown just over 30 innings. If you look at relievers with at least 30 innings this year, he is sixth overall in ERA with a 1.47. 1.47 ERA for Colin Snyder. Or 1.56, my bad. 1.56. I had the wrong number, but still, that's great. 3.46 FIP, which is a lot higher. But if you know me, you know I'm a Sierra guy for relievers. 2.38 Sierra. So what that tells me is, yeah, he's probably giving up a decent amount of batted balls that maybe he's gotten a little bit lucky with, but those batted balls have not been hit very hard, which is a good thing. Thanks, Sierra. 37% K percentage for Colin Snyder. Colin Snyder, dude. Like, come on. And he's doing it in a different way than Andrés Muñoz. He does not have elite velocity. He does not have an elite slider. He throws a sweeper that has been great this year, but really his fastball is awesome. And he does not get it done with velocity, but I think why the Mariners loved him is because he's only improved this in recent years. His fastball spin is just elite. And I think combined with his arm slot, it's kind of a lower-ish arm slot. I think it's what? It's a three-quartered arm slot, I'd say. It's like I've talked about Brian Woo's. Brian Woo's a little bit differently, but point is the fastball, it's not like coming down at you from like an overhead. It's coming a little bit from the side, which means there's more ride on it. And especially with the spin he gets on it, it's just a really deceptive pitch. And he's been really good at locating it. And guys just can't seem to square it up at all. Like, he has a 25% hard hit rate on his fastball, which is pretty astounding because four-seam fastballs are the hardest hit pitch in all of baseball. They're the most common pitch as well, but they're also the most hardest hit. And then he also mixes in this cutter, which just gives him a little bit of variation off the sweeper and the fastball. And he's just been great. He's just been really good. Like, locations have been awesome. He sequences his pitches well. I think Cal knows exactly how to catch him. He also has a sinker that's been solid, but he throws it 5% of the time. So I guess when he wants to just kind of get a pitch over and it's unexpected, he can do it. But really, the bread and butter pitch has been the four-seamer, and it really stood out to me that spin rate. Like, it's elite. That doesn't mean much for most people watching baseball, but I think that's obviously part of the reason why the Mariners really liked him this year. I think the biggest thing on his Savant page that stands out, everything is better than it was the last couple seasons. Like, most things are just way better this year. He's just been awesome. But the zone contact rate is down to 72% from almost 89% last year. So he is just, it's just been deceptive. It's been deceptive as hell for him this year. And even when he leaves one over the middle of the plate, he's not getting burned by it all the time, which is super, super useful. So both these guys have been great. It's been awesome to see Colin Snyder like kind of come into his own and remind us that that is a core competency, maybe the core competency of this, ownership didn't have any hand in this, regime, I guess, front office. There it is. Organization. I cannot find the word organization, but yeah, pitching lab has done it again. And then similar, I guess, with Austin Voth since the All-Star break has been great. Austin Voth since the All-Star break has what? 1.42 ERA. Oh, no, never mind. I keep reading the wrong numbers. 1.23, even better ERA since the All-Star break with a 2.15 FIP and a 2.72 Sierra. He's been great. And then Troy Taylor has been very intriguing since coming up, a guy that I've liked in the org for a long, long time now, it seems like, at least on this podcast, it seems like. I mentioned him at the start on my first minor league team of the year, I think, as a relief pitcher down in Arkansas. But he has a 1.42 ERA, 3.65 FIP, 2.91 Sierra, definitely a little bit lucky, but his stuff looks nice. I really like his delivery. A way smaller sample from him, obviously. He's just come up and thrown pitches in August only, but I don't know. He looks solid. With Santos, looking like he's going to be out the rest of the year, which sucks. And Jimmy, big question mark on if he's coming back and if he will even be good when he comes back. Those guys have stepped up, and I think like Troy Taylor in particular could be a massive X factor in the pen in September. Like they'll need, I think they're fine with Munoz, and even I'll even throw in freaking Colin Snyder right now as 8-9 inning or higher leverage late inning guys. Troy Taylor could be that huge X factor because they're going to need solid middle relief innings. I think they can probably get that from Voth and Thornton, but I think they're going to need more than that. And Troy Taylor is a guy that I think can fill that role for the Pen in September. So I think he's going to be massive down the stretch for this bullpen. That's been really intriguing for the squad, especially the Colin Snyder stuff, man. I don't know if I've talked about him enough on the podcast. I tweeted a lot about him when he came up and just looked awesome. And he's only looked better since then. It's been astounding what they've done with him and his what he's done as well. Give him plenty of credit. So that was me giving some of the best pitchers on this team their flowers. We need to celebrate these guys sometimes. You know, we can't be all doom and gloom. Sometimes we got to have good stuff going on. So I ended with the good stuff. And I'm going to end this podcast. There's more stuff to talk about, sure. There was lots of talk recently on the internet about the Mariners offseason and how that might go, how they'll upgrade the team. Ryan Divish went on a podcast, and whenever he does that, obviously there's stuff to talk about on the internet. Trading Logan Gilbert was a hot topic on baseball. Honkball Twitter, Mariners Twitter the other day. I floated that idea around quite a bit, maybe more than most people. It's not what I want, but this team really doesn't go about business well enough to sign elite batters. And if they refuse to trade prospects for a truly elite bat, then trading from their biggest strength makes sense. I've hit that idea over the head many times, and it'd be tough, and a lot of fans do not want to hear that, me included. I'd rather they didn't have to do that to get good bats, but they're not super competent at getting good bats, as we've seen. So, but I'm not going to talk about the offseason. We still have a month. We have a month of baseball left. They're 3.5 out. It's not impossible. It's not an impossible task for them to still win this division. They can still do it. We can have blind optimism that the offense will just catch fire in August. Like, oh, Leo Rivas, shout out to him. He stayed up after JP came back. Canzone, is the one who got sent down. Shout out to Leo Rivas, really holding water. He was like a 105 WRC plus hitter when JP was out when he was starting. That is awesome from a backup shortstop in a limited time playing. So shout out to him. Good for him staying up. JP is back. That's helpful for the lineup. That is just, even if he doesn't light the world on fire, that is super helpful for the top of the lineup because he's always going to get on base. We know JP. But Julio, he hit a home run the other night. I demand he hits 10 home runs in September and pushes his team to the playoffs. Him, Randy, Robles, maybe that outfield will just sprinkle some sexy magic on this offense and they'll go on a tear. And the Astros, nothing bad happens to that team, so it's really hard to kind of forecast their downfall. But boy, if the Mariners managed to chase them down, like the Mariners would have the wind of the entire Major League Honkball community at their back. Everyone hates the Astros. I think most fan bases who have been successful, even moderately, in the 21st century, pity the Mariners and want to see them do good for themselves, the players, for the fans. It would be tremendous content if we chased down the Astros, and it's not out of the realm of possibility. 3.5 back, we'll see where they're at next week. I'm not going to any of the Angels games this weekend because, one, I just kind of forgot to buy tickets, and now that I'm realizing, I don't want to go back. I watched them play three of the worst games of my life last month at Angel Stadium, so I'm not going back, and hopefully they end up sweeping. They're facing two pitchers who are making their major league debuts, so that doesn't bode well in my mind. That bodes like dynamite debuts for both those guys against a weak Mariners lineup, but whatever. We'll see. Either way, this podcast is ending. I'll be back next week. Thank you so much for listening. Look out for next week's pod at the same time. And of course, have a great rest of your week and go Seattle Honk Ball Mariners.